Okay, so good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center's Pinwheel Education Series on Dialectical Behavior Therapy. The Pinwheel Education Series is a monthly forum that brings together experts and persons with lived experience to talk about mental health and mental wellness. Everything related to the Pinwheel Series, including a recording of today's session, can be found on our website at www.keltymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. We really appreciate your feedback, so if you can please fill out our feedback form, which is on the table in front of you if you're here in person, or available on our website if you are on the phone or participating via telehealth. So for those of you that are joining us for the first time, the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We also offer peer support to families and youth, as well as to people of all ages struggling with eating disorders. You can visit our website at www.keltymentalhealth.ca for more information, resources, and for our contact information. So since there's no one on telehealth, I'm not going to give them any instructions. And so before I invite our speakers to take the floor, I'm just going to ask everyone in the room if you can please mute your phones. So not on vibrate, but on silent, if you would please. And everyone on the phone, if you can please mute your phones as well. So you can either do that directly on your phone by pressing the mute button, or you can press *6. And this will just minimize background noise and make the listening experience more enjoyable for everyone. And we'll unmute you at the end when it's time for questions. Okay, so I think we'll just go ahead and get started. So our first speaker is here in the room with us. So Kristen Catton is a clinical social work specialist in the Teaching and Consultation Clinic in the Outpatient Psychiatry Department at BC Children's Hospital. She's a clinical instructor in the Department of Psychiatry at UBC and co-leads the psychotherapy program at BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services. She initially trained in dialectical behavioral therapy in 2005 and leads the DBT program at BC Children's in the outpatient department. So welcome, Kristen. Thanks for being here. And go ahead.
Thank you. Okay. Well, maybe I can just start by getting a sense of people's experience. Have others taken workshops about DBT or had any experience in it? Okay. So maybe I can just start by talking a little bit about what is DBT and kind of explaining it. So DBT is a comprehensive cognitive behavioral therapy that was initially developed by Marsha Linehan, who's a psychologist in Seattle in the States. It was initially developed to treat women, highly suicidal women, generally with borderline personality disorder, so women that have had that diagnosis. Since then, it's been adapted by Jill Rethis and Alec Miller for adolescents. And you know, basically what it's been found to be most effective with is managing emotions. So it's actually useful for persons with a number of different issues, including things like difficulties with emotion regulation, difficulties with suicidal thoughts and behavior, self-harm behaviors, impulsivity, you know, difficulties with anger and anger management. It's one of the only therapies where there's actually been a lot of research that's been done and, you know, many randomized controlled trials on using it and its effectiveness with multiple populations. So for adolescents, there's a couple of randomized controlled trials and multiple other uncontrolled trials that have been done on its effectiveness. So basically the idea is that, you know, it's an intensive program that's used to treat these individuals, and for the teens that we see, many of them actually don't have a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, which is, it's rare that young children will be given that diagnosis for lots of different, you know, very valid reasons. So these kids come in with, generally with multiple kind of concerning behaviors, right, like self-harm, emotion dysregulation, sometimes interpersonal deficits, you know, difficulties managing their environment, and maladaptive coping strategies. And they're assessed, and oftentimes they might be diagnosed with depression or anxiety or parent-child relationship problems. And DBT can be offered as an effective treatment to manage lots of these issues. So what is DBT? What does it look like? So the main components include weekly individual therapy for at least 6 months to a year, combined with weekly skills groups, so a DBT skills group, where adolescents and their parents or caregivers are all in the room together working on various skills. And so the skills in the skills group that are covered, it's in sort of brought out over 5 modules. And the modules include mindfulness, walking the middle path, interpersonal effectiveness, distress tolerance, and emotion regulation. So each of these modules is covered over a period of about 4 to 5 weeks. And the young people and their parents are asked to complete homework, do mindfulness practice in each session, and participate as best as possible. So it really is a fairly intensive program. It's I think it's probably the longest group program that we run here, being 6 months in length. And the research that's been done actually indicates that most of the youth and adults that come into the program actually need more like a year of treatment. So, you know, the first part is kind of working on some of the behavioral targets. So the behavioral targets might be suicidal thoughts or behavior, might be self-harm, it might be, you know, other kind of dangerous impulsive behaviors, drinking, drug use, you know, kind of recklessness. Those are your first priority targets, as well as any kind of therapy interfering behaviors that can occur. So one of the main goals about this therapy is let's keep the clients in the therapy, otherwise they're not going to be able to get the help. So you really work hard at keeping them in the therapy and keeping them staying true to the therapy process. So I've talked a little bit about individual therapy, and I've talked a little bit about the group. The other main component is a consultation team for the therapist. So all of the therapists that are in this doing this therapy are part of a consultation team that meets weekly to discuss the clients and the therapy and ensuring that we stay true to the therapy. Right, so we're really making sure that we're hitting our targets as therapists and doing the best that we can and getting help and advice from others in managing some of the difficulties that might come up. DBT also offers phone coaching. So in many areas, this includes 24-hour phone coaching for clients that are in distress. So what this looks like is that clients sort of would call their therapist when they're finding that they're having suicidal thoughts or they're finding that they're having urges to self-harm, and they've tried some of their skills and they found it ineffective, and they're kind of at the point of not knowing what else to do, so they would call the therapist to get, you know, kind of short-term skills coaching in the moment. They're not to call after the event has happened, because then it's not very useful to get those skills. So many of the programs in the community are able to offer 24-hour phone coaching, and other programs are not able to offer that. So there, it kind of varies depending on where you're at and what kind of, you know, what the therapy program you're getting. What else can I talk about? So that's kind of DBT in a nutshell. I think, you know, from my experience, it's really been a great experience to be part of the therapy team and really feel that support from the consultation team and get that. And doing the DBT skills group, you know, you're a bit nervous with having, you know, kids and parents in the same room, because most of the groups that are run usually have them divided for lots of the time, right? And this, they're all in it together all the time. And it's not necessarily talking about their personal experiences with self-harm or suicidal ideation. It's really talking about skills and talking about how to use them, what might be effective, doing role plays, exercises, and kind of really getting into the meat of it. And lots of the parents and caregivers have reported that they've found it really valuable in their own lives as well. So, you know, we kind of all are in this process together, you know, balancing sort of validation and change, validating how difficult life can be at times and some of the difficulties that have happened to these young people. And also knowing that, you know, unfortunately, they're the only person that can get through this and can change the situation. So kind of pushing for change as well.
Thank you.
That's kind of DBT in a nutshell.
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll come back to you again, Kristen, as well, when we have time for questions a little bit later. I'm sure people are curious about the program here and learning a little bit more about that, so maybe we can talk about that then. So our next speaker is clearly on the phone. So Tina Sobanis, am I saying that correctly?
You are?
Okay, great. So she's a clinical supervisor for youth addiction and prevention services at Vancouver Coastal Health. She provides clinical support to three different teams that provide services to youth. One of these teams is SASE, School-Age Children and Youth, a substance use prevention initiative with the Vancouver School Board that engages Vancouver parents, teachers, students, administrators, and the greater community in a process to strengthen school-based alcohol and drug prevention and early intervention programs and policies. The Emotional Wellness Group was designed to be co-facilitated by the SASE Youth Engagement staff. So Tina, welcome.
Thank you.
And go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to talk a bit about the group that we developed that was kind of, I guess, what you could call a DBT light group. We certainly, it was meant to be facilitated and conducted in the schools, so we really needed to stay away from anything that was heavily treatment or process oriented, and we needed to also kind of find something that was going to be youth friendly. How this came about was, through discussion, clinical supervision discussion about kind of trends that the workers were seeing in the schools and, you know, which were a wide range of challenges that youth were presenting with, self-harm or substance use or could be, troubles with eating, relationship, that sort of thing. And so it was really looking for something that was going to kind of be able to encompass all of those and really move away from focusing on any sort of issue or problem that would be a skills-based group and also provide a bit of time for youth to really connect. So that was a challenge and essentially what happened from there was I saw this as an opportunity to kind of connect and collaborate with Child and Youth Mental Health at Vancouver Coastal Health. And approached their manager. They offered us a facilitator and somebody to help me design the group. And so we were kind of on our way with that. And basically we, did a lit review, did all those things. And what ended up happening is we found this really fabulous book that had everything just kind of laid out for us called Don't Let Your Emotions Run Your Life for Teens. It's a dialectical behavior therapy skills group that is written by Sherry Van Dyck. And it was just so easy. So we thought, why recreate this? And we essentially took the workbook and adapted it to what our needs were. It's quite an extensive book. So we essentially kind of took the book and picked it apart a bit and created this 8-week group that was based on the book but very simplified so that we could run it during the lunch hour or after school, so we had to shorten it. And we also wanted to incorporate some other pieces, so it wasn't strictly DBT, but it was more of a youth engagement as well, where youth were able to get up and move around, and which I think is really important when working with youth. So we put that together, and then we looked to pilot it in a couple of schools, and we got some buy-in from a couple of the SASE workers. And so we had two different schools, but we had the same co-facilitator from the Child and Youth Mental Health side. We thought that was important in terms of having that continuity of one person in both groups. And then the trick was kind of like, okay, who are these kids going to be? And as it turned out, one of the schools had one of the SASE workers was already working with a group of girls to start a girls group in the school. And these girls were selected by the counselor, one of the counselors in the school. There's sort of a wide range of grade 8 to about 10 or 11, and they were selected for various reasons. It could have been just needing some connections with other kids, could have been having some difficulties with parents at home or in school. It was just a wide variety, and I think that was really critical so that they weren't able to kind of look around the room and go, oh yeah, we're the whatever group. So they came together, and that group was held over lunches and was actually spread out because the lunch hours are so short. And we had to have food, very critical to have food. So they found that they were spending a lot of their time kind of getting the pizza and getting the youth settled before being able to kind of launch into things. And so that was the girls group, as it turned out. We didn't really want to gender the groups, but it's just sort of what happened. Because with the second group, it was actually turned out to be a group of boys. And this group was actually 15-year-old boys that were, again, selected by the admin. And that group actually was held during class time. So they were able to get class time, and we condensed the group. So that group ran for 6 weeks instead. And the youth got credit for being in the class and in the group, sorry, they got class credit for that. So it was quite a different arrangement, and I think that the other, we saw pros and cons to both sides, but that group primarily was youth who were struggling with kind of, you know, being present in class and being still in class and engaged in the work. So kind of a two very different groups, and I think from the facilitation side, definitely the preference was to have the in-class groups. There was a longer length of time allowed for more time for the youth to kind of process what was coming at them, to have conversations about it, and to connect with each other, whereas the lunchtime group was just a little hectic. There's always competing things happening at lunch, even though they had about 12 girls in the group, and they had a constant of about 8 to 10 that would attend on a weekly basis. So I think that really spoke to the content and to the connections that the youth were making. So at the end of that, we held an evaluation, and we basically gave them both the same kind of questionnaire to fill out that was just a question about each of the modules that they had taken and whether they remember taking it, remember some of the content, whether or not they were actually using it, or if they didn't remember it at all. And it seemed that the shorter group, the more intensive group, there was much more retention of some of those skills. But overall, we were really surprised by the feedback that we had gotten from the youth, that it was overall a very positive experience for them. And the one thing I think that really stood out for most of us in hearing them talk was that being selected, what you know, we as adults think is actually, oh, that's a really negative thing. They actually were quite honored that, you know, they were chosen to be in this group, and that there was an evaluation piece, and that, you know, they saw that as a really positive thing. And we also got some other very valuable feedback from them, which is more around not necessarily the gender composition being important, but more the youth selection. So having youth that were actually, you know, open to doing the work and kind of having those conversations, that weren't going to take that back into the hallway later and, you know, kind of talk about it. Because trust, obviously, in any group is very important. And I think, you know, the one very big surprise was that the mindfulness piece of the group, and I didn't really get into kind of the content, but it really was very basic kind of emotional wellness and regulation and relationships and, you know, identifying emotions even. But the mindfulness piece for those boys was really key and incredibly helpful for them. And that even now when the SASE worker checks back in with them, they're very keen for a level 2. Some of them are still using those skills and have really, it's really made a difference for them. In their lives, to kind of in their relationships with family and with friends, and ability to kind of work through problems and not have things escalate, and to just be calm and, you know, to take a moment and think about things. So yeah, so that was kind of the group and our evaluation piece, and I think I'll leave it there.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Tina. So we've actually got loads of time for questions. So I think probably what we can do is open it up on the phone first. So just a reminder to everyone to unmute your phones if you've muted them. And does anyone have questions for our speakers? I know I do, but I'm not going to go first.
Hi, this is Angela, youth engagement worker in Burnaby School District.
Hi, Angela. Go ahead.
I have two quick questions. When the first one for Kristen, when you were talking about the 5 modules, could you quickly just repeat them again? What was on mindfulness,
yeah,
walking mental path, distress tolerance?
That's right. So yeah, mindfulness, you know, is kind of about, you know, being able to be in the here and now, and
yep,
and, you know, kind of look at the rational mind versus emotion mind and try to find sort of wise mind in the middle. Walking the middle path is the module that was designed for adolescents specifically, and it's really about kind of looking at dialectics. So there's always more than one way to see a situation and more than one solution. And you generally, parents and caregivers really enjoy that module because it looks a lot at kind of parenting conflict and how to find the middle. Distress tolerance, you know, is really about looking at skills on how to get through the moment without making it worse when things aren't going great. Emotion regulation is, you know, looking at how to manage emotions without feeling like emotions are ruling you. And then interpersonal effectiveness is really about how to make and how to build and hold on to healthy relationships in a way that maintains your own self-respect. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I missed the last two. And and then for Tina, quick question. The workbook, Don't Let Your Emotions Run Your Life, where would somebody pick that up?
I think we actually just ordered a whole whack of them from Amazon, yeah. But I think you can probably get it at Odin as well.
Okay.
And they may even have it. There's a workbook part of it, and then there's just a straight up kind of book on it as well.
Super great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How about in the room? Are there questions here? Go ahead.
Kristen, you mentioned you work with the families alongside the teens or the youth. Tina, did you involve families at all?
We didn't for this group. We didn't bring families in, no. It was, like I said, during class time, and this is often kind of part of SASE, is that they will work together. You know, the groups that they have are essentially, a lot of really kind of social emotional stuff that isn't necessarily involving the family, unless there's kind of an issue. And then we also have a parent stream, which I didn't talk about, that would get involved with the youth. But in terms of individually, the groups together, no, there was no family involvement. But it's a good point.
Would you see an advantage to doing that as well?
I think we could do that. The issue is really, when you've got something that's on school grounds, it is a little bit of a challenge. Like, you know, you don't really want to get into something too heavy and too therapeutic. But I do think, something that we hadn't thought about was a family component for this, in kind of rolling it out further. So I'll make a note of that. I think it's a really great suggestion. The other piece of this was to do a stage two, and certainly some of the youth that were in our pilot groups were asking for that and saying, like, wanting more. And so that was kind of our focus, was to look at, the next steps and then another group for people to kind of carry on with this and what that might look like. And for that group, we actually thought that it might be better to hold that off-site, just because it gives us a little more freedom. So there are some trickiness to kind of holding things on the school site and then bringing parents in. And I will also say that our parent stream has workshops in the evening for parents that are very much about adolescent development and that sort of thing. So it's not the same. But I think it's a great idea to maybe link with them to see if there's, some way of kind of doing this with the parents as well.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Other questions from the room?
I have a question to both of you guys. How does it look like when you're trying to involve children that have external counselling support or that they're already involved with another profession in the community? Like, how do you collaborate, I guess, or have you had to?
Right. So from where we are at BC Children, so generally if young people are involved with other mental health services, we want for them to be getting the help that they need there if it's available. Generally what happens is if they're seeing somebody in the community who's not able to provide DBT, that usually that therapist will say, I recognize that this child needs this, and I'm kind of feeling at a loss here. I really want this support for this kid. and usually they'll kind of, you know, will take over. It's not recommended that the child ends up having more than one therapist. So, you know, in DBT it's generally one therapist and the DBT skills program. And so, yeah, I mean, there are programs in the community as well that are doing DBT. So, you know, we kind of work together to make sure that we're, you know, not seeing the same kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the same in the school, Tina, or?
Yeah, for us, it's really, if you think of this program in terms of, you know, kind of on a continuum, we're really in the prevention area of things. And that's not to say that some of these youth probably, you know, may have had some intervention happening for them, but we really didn't go there with them. And
okay.
This is such a, that's why I called it a DBT light group, because it really was so basic and really, you know, some of those fundamental skills around, you know, identifying an emotion, like very, very basic stuff. And so we didn't see that in any way interfering if somebody was receiving services elsewhere. With that, it would be more of an adjunct to that. And so there wasn't contact in terms of with outside professionals.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I'm going to guess that most of these youth didn't have that kind of support.
Okay.
In their lives and weren't kind of in that place.
Okay.
Because it really, I think, you know, for adults, for you, for anyone, like these are just really basic skills that I think anyone can benefit from learning, you know, mindfulness, how to calm your mind and be present. And so for us, it was more about that kind of very early stuff and basic skill building. So we didn't really go there. And I honestly can't say if there were others involved.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
It's for Tina. It's Janine from up in 100 Mile House here. As far as the group, have you guys continued to run the groups, or was that just a one-off test, or is it being successful and you keep on running?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge for other reasons this school year to kind of get the groups in school. I mean, the one thing that we really recognize from this and from the evaluation process is that school buy-in is absolutely critical, and that as I mentioned before, the ideal is to get class time. So that does require, you know, the admin and teacher to be on side with that. So logistically, it is a bit of a challenge. And what we found last year was that these groups didn't happen until the very end of the school year, and because of the start to our school year that we had with the strike, it was just such a challenge to even get in the door to talk about it. Part of the evaluation process, though, was with the admin and the counselors to find out, like, how can we do this so that it's more successful, that we're able to roll it out. And so they were helpful in some ways, but anyone who works with the schools knows that each school is its own community, and so it is really that sort of tailored approach and having someone like a SASE worker in the school to be able, you know, there to kind of find the youth, to work with the admin and the teacher, it is kind of a critical piece to that. So our hope is that we are going to start rolling out some more groups in the next few weeks. We have schools that are interested. And again, we're kind of at that time of year where, you know, admin do have youth that they're thinking, yeah, could really benefit from this. So we haven't yet. It's a bit late, but it was late last year as well. And like I said, if it's class time, you really only need about 6 weeks to do it.
No.
So it is our hope. And sorry, I just want to also say that I think what we'll do with this group is make it part of, for next year moving forward, make it part of the SASE curriculum. So that we're looking to offer it in more schools on a regular basis.
Okay, I have one second part to that question too. Is, do you think it would be a good one to implement in all classrooms, like say a career and personal planning classroom, if because it being basic skills and just so useful,
mm-hmm.
think it could be possibly part of a personal planning curriculum?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what we did was we did use a Planning 10 class. That was the class that the teacher that we approached for the youth, the boys group in the one school. So I do think, I mean, it's real, like I said, it's just really basic stuff. And our next piece is also, like, we have the SASP worker as one facilitator, and then the child and youth mental health person as another, and we did that purposely for the first group. We really wanted to have, you know, good skill on board if things kind of went a bit sideways, or if you know, if youth were really distressed in any way, that we had skilled people to, you know, be able to deal with any crisis that came up. That never happened. And not to say it couldn't happen, but in the groups it never happened. But now I think in some of those, there's two schools anyway, we're looking to get partnerships with the counselors so that it would be the SASE worker and the counselor co-facilitating the group. And it could be that, you know, I think it would be amazing if it became part of a regular class. It would be fantastic. So we're moving incrementally here. But yeah.
Okay. Do you have your contact information on the Kelsey site?
Oh, I'm not sure if I do.
Is that possible? Because if we could possibly replicate it, say, up here in the interior, I think that would be a great thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I can get my contact information to you for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can just email the Kelsey Center and I can make that connection for you.
Great, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Are there other questions over the phone?
Hi, this is Cheryl from Hazleton.
Hi.
Hi, I'm at Child and Youth Mental Health on the phone, so I can't see you guys, but thanks for doing this. My question is, what is the most minimal size of a group that you can have? Because up here in Hazleton, we have kids that need DBT, but it's in such small numbers, it seems almost impossible to get a group. Mm-hmm. Because they're all at different stages. But what would you suggest is the minimal size? And question number two is, Kristen, where did you do your DBT training?
So just regarding the question on size, you know, when DBT for adolescents first started, there was a group of only two clinicians that were, you know, seeing each two or three kids and then running a group together. What we've got with some of our population that doesn't fit the age range of our current group is that the clients that are kind of outliers are receiving individual therapy as well as then skills therapy training from a different clinician, so that's also possible. Or, you know, one clinician could, say, do it in an hour and a half and split it up and do 45 minutes individual session, 45 minutes skills training. I think there's a real range of possibilities. The best scenario would be if you can get a group of kids, you know, maybe if you can even get two or three and their parents to attend, you could run a skills group. I can't see that being a problem. But if that's not possible, then there's lots of other ways to do DBT and do this therapy. To make it fit for your population. And then secondly, the training that I've had, so initially the training that I received was through Behavioral Tech in Seattle. They came up and did a 10-day intensive as well as consultation. And then I've received training through the Vancouver Center, the Vancouver DBC Center, with John Wagner, as well as then some further extra training on some of the updates that have happened with Marshall Linehan's work from Behavioral Tech in Seattle. And I'm just thrilled, I was just thrilled to hear about this work in the schools and some of the work to kind of mainstream these skills. From what I hear from Behavioral Tech in Seattle, they're actually working with some of the school systems in the United States to find ways of instituting some of this as curriculum, because they find that it is so important and these are life skills that kids just aren't getting.
Okay, other questions either? Yeah, go ahead.
What would you say is the big difference between CBT and DBT?
Good question. So DBT is a modified CBT type of therapy. It's much more extensive and includes a lot more, you know, different techniques that are kind of brought in, but the basis of it is really behavioral, right? Mm-hmm. It's quite behavioral focused. The idea, so that one of the main differences is sort of dialectics. So the idea of kind of there can be two opposing truths that are both true, or, you know, kind of looking for the synthesis, right? Kind of finding ways for lots of these young people we see is kind of this real kind of back black and white thinking, or, you know, kind of seeing everything is all good right now and all bad tomorrow, and how can we look at seeing the both, right? So taking out the but and putting in the and. You know, I'm doing the best I can, and I need to do better, try harder, and be more motivated to change. Right? So looking at kind of the synthesis.
Okay, other questions on the phone?
I have a question. This is a child and youth mental health from Cornell.
Hi.
I have a question for both speakers. I'm just wondering, have you guys applied this DBT, either the individual therapy or the group, on traumatized children or youth?
Well, I mean, I can speak to that. So this therapy was really devised for traumatized, you know, children and youth or adults, really. The research shows that I think it's like 99% of adults with borderline personality disorder have experienced extensive trauma in their lifetime.
Yes.
And what we see is for the young people that we see, that trauma shows up in lots of different ways. And the way that it's kind of conceptualized in the biosocial theory is sort of the idea that a child might be born kind of highly sensitive. So they're a bit more reactive. It takes longer for them to kind of return to baseline. And they're just as sensitive to the world around them. And kind of combine that with an invalidating environment. Now that invalidating environment can come from anywhere. It could be bullying at school. It could be, you know, a difficult fit with parents who are struggling. It could be lots of different things, right? So that trauma of constantly receiving feedback that what you're feeling or thinking is wrong or incorrect, and in, you know, getting feedback that you need to kind of fit in and looking to the outside world to validate your own thoughts and emotions, then in turn, you know, it ends up with some of these difficulties where they have a hard time kind of trusting themselves and trusting their own emotions and thoughts and feelings.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
And I'll add for us, we didn't have the backgrounds on most of these youth, and it was the connection through the counselor. And so the trauma piece for us is really more about how we present a group and that we're trauma informed, as opposed to actually addressing any sort of trauma in the group or getting to that place with any of the youth.
Okay. Thank you. Maybe I'll just add, you know, in terms of the doing the therapy, so there's sort of three parts of the therapy. The first stage is really addressing the behaviors, so kind of looking at coping, right, and finding new ways to cope with difficult emotions. And then the second stage is actually dealing with the trauma. So what the research shows is that it's pretty difficult to delve in and deal with the trauma if the young people don't have coping skills to get through it, right? Mm-hmm. And then you see a real resurgence of some of the maladaptive coping strategies when you start addressing the trauma and you don't have the coping skills.
Yeah. And you will do the trauma piece in individual session, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So the skills group does not look at kind of individual stories or any of that. It's more really about skills.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, other questions in the room or on the phone?
If I could just add, you mentioned about how this is different, DBT is different from CBT, and I think the one piece that I forgot to put in there was the really heavy emphasis on validation. So DBT really focuses on validating clients, validating their experience, how hard life can be at some time, you know, at times, how difficult things have been in the past, you know, and really trying to build core connection with youth. Yeah, so that's the one piece I think that CBT does not emphasize so much.
Kristen, can you tell us a little bit about the DBT program here at BC Children's?
Sure, I can. So our DBT program is small, as with most DBT programs, because it's so intensive, it does require a really long commitment. So when you're looking at making a commitment of 6 months, we're not able to accept tons of kids. So generally the referrals that we're accepting are from through our outpatient psychiatry department or other areas in our psychiatry area. We're seeing kids for 6 months or even up to a year if needed in the DBT program, and then referral back out to the community. And I think it's kind of the same in the community. So Vancouver Coastal Health has a DBT program as well. So that's run within Child and Youth Mental Health. So what will happen in that, the referral process for that would be that kids are referred to Child and Youth Mental Health. They're seen by an individual therapist. That individual therapist might start some work with them, some individual work. And if it's found not to be effective, and they have some of the indicators that would indicate DBT, they would be referred to the DBT program for Vancouver Coastal Health. So then I think each Child and Youth Mental Health team around the Lower Mainland is trying to offer some part of DBT. It might not be the whole package, but it might be part of it.
Great. I have a question for you, Kristen. Because you're based in Vancouver, do you take students or children or families from rural areas?
Well, we do. So our services are tertiary, you know, provincial care. So we do get referrals from physicians all over the province. And some of those kids we're able to see through telehealth and do assessment and referral back out to community. With this treatment model, it would be pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. So the kids that we're seeing right now are primarily Lower Mainland kids. There is some hope that at some point perhaps we can do more. We're also doing consultations to child and youth mental health teams in other locations throughout the province, so that, you know, perhaps we can work together to help them build up their teams to do this treatment in their location.
Okay, so last call for questions, either in the room or on the phone.
I heard from one of the child and youth mental health workers that they didn't see DBT until 18, but when I went online, the research was showing that they'd studied 11-year-olds, and they'd shown that, you know, they were showing the signs, and they said you don't just wake up at 18 and suddenly have borderline personality disorder. Just what are your thoughts on that, about the age sort of discrimination, about the younger kids?
Yeah, so I mean, I would agree. So most adults that have that diagnosis of borderline personality disorder showed signs and symptoms in adolescence. That being said, lots of adolescents that show those signs don't end up with borderline personality disorder. So, you know, and even with self-harm behavior, so the kids at 14 that are self-harming, that number is reduced by half at age 18. So just, I mean, the whole development of adolescence itself is about gaining skills and about gaining coping mechanisms and that kind of thing. So lots of kids are able to get through it with, you know, kind of regular supports, and some kids are not. So, you know, you don't really see that diagnosis being given in adolescence, because it's a time of such growth and change. And I think in the past there's been such stigma about that diagnosis. That piece has been difficult. That being said, it doesn't mean that the treatment can't be available.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, I think that's a wrap. Thank you to Tina and Kristen for speaking today, and thanks to everyone who attended. And have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.